Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan De Burke Butler joins us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
We're going to go to the US first and a dispute over Marilyn Monroe's house, or her former house.
Yeah, former house.
She doesn't live there anymore.
She doesn't. No, she hasn't for a while. Yeah. So a couple of years ago, I think it was back in 2016, an heiress by the name of Brina Milstein and her husband, a TV producer by the name of Roy Bank, they bought a house in Brentwood, which is obviously a fairly affluent part of Los Angeles. And that was fine. They bought their own gaff for about $9 million or whatever. Fabulously rich. And they realised that they had moved into a house that used to belong to someone very famous. And that was, of course, Marilyn Monroe. Now, the house beside them was bought by Marilyn Monroe in 1962 for $75,000. Okay, next to nothing. But she died there 6 months later at the age of 36. And obviously people still come along to the place and they get off buses and they take photographs and all that kind of thing. So when the house came up for sale, this couple, Brina Milstein and the TV producer Roy Bank, they decided they were going to buy it. So they did that last September. They bought it for $8.35 million.
Wow.
Then they applied for permission to demolish the whole house, okay? And that permission was granted by the LA City Council, right? And that was fine. But of course, there was a public outcry when this was discovered, right? And so that meant that in January, the LA Cultural Heritage Commission recommended that the house, which they had just bought, which belonged to Marilyn Monroe, was given landmark status, right? So that meant that there was a delay put on the demolition order.
Okay. Right?
So obviously this particular couple weren't happy about that because they wanted to go in, knock it down and whatever, build tennis courts and guest houses and all that kind of thing. So now they've decided as of Monday that they're going to take LA to court. They're suing them basically, and they're saying that the city officials used backdoor machinations in trying to preserve a house that doesn't meet the criteria for status as a historic cultural monument. And they're kind of using the argument of the ship of Theseus, otherwise known as Trigger's Broom,
as
you'll know. And they're basically saying that since 1962, since she died, there has been no fewer than 14 owners in that particular house, and it doesn't bear any resemblance to the house that was there before. She may as well have been living in Rohini.
Yes,
all right,
they change it so many times. It's not the original house.
There's nothing there that relates to Marilyn Monroe, so it doesn't meet the criteria at all. So they're taking them to court anyway, and we're going to find out what happens in July. A vote by the city council is going to be taken to decide whether they will give that house landmark status. So you can, it's a small story now, which you can expect it to grow legs during the summer.
And they haven't offered an olive branch as in, we'll pay to put a plaque there or something like that.
At some point there was an idea of doing a Francis Bacon, you know, the way they took the studio from London and brought it to Hugh Lane over here and relocating the house. But that kind of defeats the purpose of their argument, given the fact that this is not her house or it doesn't look anything like it. So there you are.
Yeah, okay. Well, but if people are still turning up to have a look at it, then I imagine at least there's an emotional connection to that site, at least. Malaysia is going to start giving away orangutans. Why?
Yeah, this is one of these stories that caught my eye, and yet there's no conclusion to it at this point, right? So Malaysia produces an awful lot of palm oil, right? It's the second biggest producer in the world after its neighbour Indonesia, right? And most of the palm oil that it produces, and Indonesia produces obviously, comes from the island of Borneo. Now on Borneo, as you know, there are lots of orangutans. If you've seen anything about Borneo, they always bring up documentaries about them. Some very sad footage of orangutans going through forests that are being cleared and being chased and that kind of thing. And back 100 years ago, there would have been over 230,000 orangutans on this in Malaysia, let's say. And it's about half that or even less than half that now, right? So they are sort of verging on the endangered species list or whatever it might be. So there was a biodiversity meeting of some sort last week in Malaysia where the Minister of Plantations and Commodities got up and basically said that we needed to show countries of the world that Malaysia is a sustainable oil palm producer, and that a way of doing that and to prove to the global community that Malaysia is committed to biodiversity is by giving away orangutans to them. So people who effectively buy their palm oil will be given orangutans in exchange. Now, when I saw this headline, I said to myself, this is rather perverse, to be honest with you, because it's hypocritical. It's nothing to do with conservation. And somebody else agreed with me. And thankfully, he's an academic called Stuart Pym, who's into conservation ecology at Duke University in the United States. And he was asked by a news station in the United States what his thoughts were on this. And he said it was obscene, repugnant and hypocritical to destroy rainforests where these animals live and then give them away as gifts. And I think he might have a point here. Now, there are others, it should be said, who say, look, palm oil and the industry is not going away. Mm. People who are trying to conserve the land and look after these animals, they're not going away either. So we have to come to a realistic conclusion here and get the industry around palm oil to work with the people who are trying to save orangutans, save their habitat, and see what we can do. But the details of this, we're not really sure how it's going to work, to be honest. There was no details given, just an announcement.
Yeah, and so we don't know if there's any kind of huge uptake in the palm oil business in Malaysia. Well, people are queuing up to get their free orangutans.
Well, since that statement has been made, I didn't check the stock markets or stocks and shares whether they went through the roof in palm oil at this stage. But it remains to be seen what the details are, but it is an odd one.
Yeah, maybe even a tone-deaf one.
Yeah.
Right. Again, as I'm probably boring people saying, this is one of those stories that which if it happened closer to home, would be headline news. But 147 people so far is the death toll in Brazil from flooding.
Well, you make an extraordinary point there at the top there about it being so far away, because I would see Brazil as being in our news orb, if you know what I mean. So I was, like you, very surprised that there hasn't been much more coverage of this. This is in Rio Grande do Sul. Okay, so this is a state down in the south of the country. It's just north of Uruguay, right? Very briefly, very historically, it's been populated by Italians and Germans. A very mixed place, fairly wealthy but agrarian sort of an area, right? The biggest city there is Porto Alegre, has a population of about 1.4 million people, okay? And it has really been suffering over the last number of days and weeks, right? Heavy rain started there at the end of April. And then last Sunday, the Guaíba River, it's a massive thing, burst its banks, okay? And has really badly affected the city, right? So there was pictures coming from there where, for example, the airport is closed, and there was pictures coming where planes were more or less submerged in the water, right? Yeah. Ridiculous stuff. And nothing like this has been seen since the early 1940s. Now, at this point, 147 people have died. There will be more bodies that will be found, but 500,000 people have been displaced. They're talking about migration and people having to leave and all sorts of things. And is that, as if that wasn't bad enough, two other rivers that feed into this huge river also burst their banks just in the last couple of days. So the floods are not abating one bit. So state of emergency at the moment. Lula, who was supposed to go abroad to Chile on a state visit, has cancelled that. Even Biden has got involved, offering help and that kind of thing. So a desperate situation there.
Yeah, has anyone said looks very climate changey, this kind of devastating event?
Yeah, so there's researchers at an organisation called Climameter who study the weather extremes, and they say that the cyclical rains in this area, they do happen, but they have said that they have become more intense due to climate change.
Yeah. Israel we're going to go to next, and probably not the story people are expecting. This is about Malawians who were deported from Israel. Why?
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of coverage of what's going on in Israel and the like, but I just thought this was a slightly different angle. 12 Malawians have been deported from Israel. They were given, Malawi and Israel did a deal on workers, right? So the situation in Israel since October of last year has been terrible in terms of labour shortages, right? Because there's a lot of people off fighting, and then there's other people that are covering. They reckon that they're short about 750,000 people in the workforce, all right? And they're losing something like $600 million a day as a result, right? Tourism decimated, the tech industry decimated, and agriculture is also decimated because, of course, an awful lot of the work was done by Palestinians who used to come in, and now they're not allowed in at all. So what they're doing is they're going around the world trying to get other people to take up the slack. And they went to Malawi, they did a deal, they brought in farm labourers from Malawi, but these 12 weren't apparently weren't happy with the conditions and the pay that they were working under in Israel. So they left the farm and they basically went off to work in a bakery in Tel Aviv. And this bakery was raided, I think, last week or maybe 10 days ago. 40 people were found working in it, foreign workers, and 12 of them were from Malawi. They didn't have the right visas. They were sent back home.
Right.
So the attitude from Israel basically has been, look, they got caught. They shouldn't have been doing what they were doing. And this is how people who don't, you know, stick to the criteria of their visas will be dealt with. And that's exactly what's
okay, happening. Okay, I suppose that was the terms of their visas.
Sure.
If they were complaining about the pay, is there like a minimum wage in Israel?
So there is. There's a minimum wage of 32 shekels. It equates to nearly €8, right, an hour. 32 shekels. These guys were being paid between 18 and 20, even though they had signed contracts for the minimum wage. So they weren't being treated fairly. That's what they say, at least. The ambassador said, look, if they felt that they weren't being treated right, there's a hotline that they could have called. But I imagine that hotline isn't that responsive. But
yeah.
I'm open to correction.
Yeah.
That,
so. And this particular deal that Israel and Malawi have, has that put this in jeopardy now?
Well, it appears, according to the same ambassador, Michael Lotem is his name, the Israeli ambassador to Malawi, he's saying that they've actually signed a new deal to get 3,000 more workers from Malawi over. So it would seem not at this stage anyway. I'm not sure if something has happened since this story broke.
Yeah, right. Kenya we're going to go to finally. And this is a strange one. Staging a robbery outside a police station. Maybe give the context for all of this.
Yeah, so these are four TikTokers who were arrested for filming a staged robbery, as you say, outside a police station. Various different reports on this from various different sources. So one source basically said that one of the people who've been now charged went into the police station and asked somebody in the canteen, could we make a little film? And they were told no.
Yeah.
So I think to get a bit of revenge, they turned around and went outside and they staged a robbery where somebody was walking past the police station pretending to be drunk. Two people on a motorcycle taxi, came along, took their bag, and that was filmed and it was put on TikTok. Right.
Okay.
So it went viral. Everybody thought it was very funny, except for the police, who knew that they were the butt of the jokes here, the joke here. So CCTV footage was found. They were tracked down, these four, and they've now been charged and their case will be heard on the 30th of July. I'm not 100% sure, you know, what sort of jail term they might get or whether they'll be fined.
What's the charge?
Well, they've been charged with publishing false information.
Okay, right. That's a fairly broad one. All right. So I assume the idea of making this TikTok, it was that, look, this robbery happened right outside a police station.
It was to humiliate the police.
Yes.
And I don't think it's going to work out for these four TikTokers.
Right. What should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, a few things coming up on Friday. There is a new Billie Eilish album released. Just want to make sure I'm still down with the kids and all that kind of thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, very important. Saturday, Donald Trump addresses the NRA. The National Rifle Association, so that should be quite interesting.
Taking time out from the schedule of court appearances, yes.
Sunday, there's general election in the Dominican Republic. And also on Friday, I should say that my 12-year-old is having his birthday.
Okay.
Or he will be 12
on
Friday.
On that day, well, happy birthday to him. Jonathan, thanks million for coming into us as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.